This is the month, the time of the month when we talk about lawn and garden care. And we do that, in fact, every month. We start in the spring and go through the summer and into the early part of the fall. And our guest for these programs is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And it's pretty much open to whatever's on your mind. If you're thinking about things that grow in the home landscape, grass, trees, shrubs, flowering plants, stuff you can eat, houseplants, any and all of that kind of thing. If you are got some kind of problem and you're not quite sure how to approach it, maybe you would like to have suggestions about particular kind of plants, or you have other sorts of questions, you're certainly welcome to pick up the telephone and call in here and talk with Sandy. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, and that means if it would be long-distance call, use that number, and we'll pay for the call, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL, that's the number for Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Good morning.
So I think we're now, last time you were here, we were still having this weird weather. It was cold. Mm-hmm. It was hot. Now, we are supposed to be past the average last frost. So now do we really think now that you can put out tender plants and not worry about it getting cold and having them get nipped?
Boy, was that a definite sigh? It is one of those things that actually we could have a frost even this late. And actually, we could have a frost clear up till May 15th. So, you know, we're still at that point. But at this point, usually we're in pretty good shape. And usually if you can look at the forecast for the next week or so, and usually you can find that out. And if it doesn't look like there's going to be a problem with really cold weather, then I wouldn't have a problem with putting things out. But you still need to sort of make sure you listen to the weather forecast. And if it does look like things are going to be cold, you might want to wait.
I guess the classic date I always think about is the thing where it's pretty much okay to anytime after that is Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Everybody
and
says,
I think,
Mother's Day. So that does put it at mid-May.
Sure. And that actually is a pretty good ballpark. People usually can remember that.
Okay.
We should be in good shape.
Well, we are starting to get some callers lined up, and we will just get right to the phones. I think we'll start out with someone in Indiana on our toll-free line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Thank you for this information. I just seeded a yard, their yard, and I just seeded it last night. When should I mow that first? How high should I cut it?
Actually, as soon as it needs to be mowed, but normally I would probably mow it at 2.5 inches.
Okay.
I mean, down to 2.5 inches. So you might wait till it gets maybe 3 inches and then mow it down to 2.5.
But the foxtail and all that comes up and the weeds that come up with it, is there anything to do about that? Or I mean, it hasn't come up yet, but I know that'll happen.
Right.
Anything to do about that kind of keep it mowed down?
Yeah, I think, a lot of that stuff you can just through mowing, you'll sort of take care of, especially a lot of the, I don't know if you have any soil brought in, but sometimes you can get some agricultural type weeds, and usually just through mowing, a lot of those won't survive. But you may see some things like crabgrass, certainly foxtail, and some of those annual grassy weeds will sometimes come in. And I really, at this point, I wouldn't worry about it too much, and probably what you might want to do is just sort of keep an eye on it, or sort of keep in the back of your head how high a population you have of that. And then maybe next spring you might want to do a pre-emergent crabgrass control that will take care of a lot of those annual grassy weeds. So kind of just keep an eye on it and get some ideas on whether you're going to have a problem with that. Broadleaf weeds, you might certainly also keep an eye on those. And then this fall actually is not a bad time to take care of a lot of the broadleaf weeds, the perennial weeds, things like if you end up with a lot of dandelions and violet clover, those kinds of things that are perennial broadleaf weeds. Actually, the fall is a very good time to take care of a lot of those.
Very good. I was concerned about damaging the little seedlings, bluegrass and that with mowing it too early, but it doesn't sound like that's too big a problem.
No, and you really don't want it to get, sometimes I see people get it, let it get super long just because
right.
it's a seeded grass, and that's really not the route to go. You really don't want it to get real tall and then mow it down fairly short. That's not a good idea. So your best bet is now just to really concentrate on keeping it moist. That's going to be your big thing.
Right.
So just, you know, irrigating, you know, frequently. You don't have to do it real deeply, but very frequently until it comes up, and then once it comes up, then you can hold back on the number of times, but make sure that you water it very thoroughly.
Okay, well, very good. Thank mm-hmm. you very much.
All right, thank you. And on we go to someone in Chicago, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. I rescued a plant from the dumpster, and somebody was, I know they use the word calico or calum chloe.
Uh-huh.
What is the right name? Is there such a plant?
Yes, yes. And actually, I think calanchoe is actually the correct pronunciation. It's
K-A-L-A-N-C-H-O-E.
O-E.
Mm-hmm. It has sort of cup-shaped leaves.
Uh-huh. Succulent.
That's it. How mm-hmm. does one transplant, if you want to get another one from that, what would you do there? Just break off one of those stems?
Yeah, actually, they root fairly easily from cuttings.
They
if
do.
You just want to take a cutting, and uh-huh. yeah, they'll root from that. But you know, it's not hardy. It's one of those sort of indoor flowering plants that we would have. But you can certainly put it out through the summer.
Uh-huh.
Put it outside.
Do you water that a lot or a little? Or looks, it's a sort of a succulent.
Yeah, it's so succulent that really, it's a good idea just to let it dry out in between waterings. You don't want it to let it go so dry that it starts to sort of crinkle up, but I would let it dry in between waterings.
And one more question. When you buy potting soil in the supermarket, that doesn't seem to hold the water very long. Is that just for potting a plant or for perpetual, to leave a plant there all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Do you add peat moss or something to that? Would that be better?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what you're purchasing. If you're purchasing something that just says potting soil, generally what I've found is that all of those, I haven't been real happy with any of those potting soils just directly out of the bag, to be honest with you. There may be some out there that I'm not aware of, but most of the ones that I've seen need some sort of soil amendments added to them. It could be peat moss, and actually usually what I do is add peat moss and perlite or peat moss and vermiculite to them, and that seems to do much better.
Peat moss and perlite. What are peat moss is sort of absorbs water. What does a perlite and vermiculite? What are they? The purpose of those?
Yeah, perlite actually helps to add drainage to them.
Uh-huh.
So that's another important thing, of course, because you don't want the soils to be too wet. So it kind of adds that. The vermiculite actually will add a certain amount of water retention and also will add some aeration to the soil as well.
Those would be available in a supermarket. That's all
right.
I know, is supermarket stuff.
Right, but usually you can purchase those things and then add to them. But usually that's what needs to be done, especially with some of the potting soils that are fairly inexpensive.
On that Chloe plant, would you water that like once a week or heavily, or just once every 2 weeks? Or
yeah, I would just. I would just sort of gauge it, you know, and really look at, because part of it is going to depend on what kind of soil you have it in. Certainly, they love, you know, you could put them out underneath a shady tree somewhere, and they love being outside. But I would definitely sort of watch it. It certainly can dry out in between waterings, and certainly could dry for a couple of days in between waterings and not be damaged, because it is a real succulent plant.
And a north light is all right with that plant.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
you do have to realize that is, in order to get it in flower, they do have nice flowers on them, but they're actually a short day plant. They need long, yeah,
mm-hmm.
short days, long nights. So what I would do is probably just leave it outside as long as you can in the fall. I wouldn't let it go to temperatures below 45, but leave it out as long as you can, and then hopefully those natural shorter days will trigger it into flower.
Will it continue to grow up, or will it just sort of reach a height and then stay there? It's about a foot and a half.
Yeah, they can actually they continue to grow,
right. You cut them back at the top, or
you certainly can to make them more bushy, because sometimes they get kind of long and leggy looking.
All right, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. And in spring, summer, fall, we do a show with her every month about lawn and garden care, taking care of plants in the home landscape. So if you have questions, you can call us in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Paxton on line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I got a question about harvested rhubarb. I got some questions written down here. And how big does rhubarb have to be?
How big does it have to be before you cut it? Or
before you harvest it.
Well, it's probably more of an age thing. We usually don't like to harvest it until it's at least 3 years old. So it's really probably more of an age thing than size thing.
It's older than that.
Well, then, right now's a good time to start harvesting.
Right now?
Oh, sure. As soon as they start coming up, and the size-wise is really strictly up to you. Some people like the smaller ones better.
How do you harvest it?
You can just cut the stalks to the ground.
Oh, okay.
We usually like to leave some leaves on there just to sort of help the plant along.
Uh-huh.
And then usually, once we start getting into the hot part of the season, it's usually a good idea just to quit harvesting it.
Yeah.
So by the time we start getting into like the 1st of July or so, it's probably a good time to sort of, hold back unless we're getting good rains.
Another question, when do you harvest? What, from now to July then?
Right. Uh-huh. And actually, you could even harvest after that, as long as you're not taking a whole lot of the plant at any one time and maybe watering it periodically.
But. Another question, what part do you harvest? I mean, to eat.
Okay, you're just eating the stem?
Yeah, the stalk.
Right. And you don't want to eat the leaves, because the leaves are actually somewhat poisonous. And so you don't want to eat the leaves, but you're just going to harvest that stalk. And then hopefully you either really, really like tart things, or you have lots of sugar on hand. So,
how long's the stalks, I mean, when you cut it?
Well, probably most of the time we're looking at a foot long.
Oh, and the color of the stalks when you harvest it, what kind of color should they have?
Well, that really depends on the variety. Some of them are quite red. Some of the varieties are quite red. And actually, some of the rhubarb varieties are green.
Then I got another one here. It's my understanding the leaves are poisonous. Is that correct?
Right. So you don't want to eat the leaves. You just want to eat the stalk part.
And then how long can you store it? In the refrigerator, when you get harvested from a garden and bring it to your refrigerator, how long can you store it in the refrigerator before you got to work it up, cook it and all that?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I would imagine it would probably be at least a week. You could probably keep it in the refrigerator. Probably if you're really planning on keeping it quite that long, you might think about freezing it. It actually freezes quite well. So you might want to just freeze it if you're not going to use it right away, just to keep the freshness.
Okay. I think that's all I need to know for right now.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Sure thing. Thanks for the call. We'll just keep up here, coming back to someone locally in Urbana for next caller. Line one. Hello.
Hello. Okay. I bought a hydrangea bush this weekend, and I'm trying to figure out where's the best place to put it. It's a west wall by my garage that has a garden plot sort of thing, and I'm going to put a lot of different flowers in there. But the seller told me hydrangea doesn't really like strong sunlight, and this part of the house I'm thinking about, this side of the house, gets sort of southwest exposure. So it gets pretty hot over there, and I was wondering if it would not make it, if I should try to find a shadier spot.
Yeah, I to be honest with you, I really would.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't like that late afternoon sun, which it sounds like this is exactly what it's going to get.
Oh, okay.
So if you could find a little spot that maybe is a little shadier. Actually, the east side of the house works out nice because they get, plenty of sun in the morning, and then they're protected later on in the afternoon.
East side. Okay, the other question I had real quick was about recycling potting soil.
Mm-hmm.
I had some plants in pots last summer, and they all died back. They were just annuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if it's okay to sort of dig out the old roots and just, reuse the soil.
Yeah, I think, you know, you see a lot of debate on this, and some books and references will say, oh, you need to start with fresh soil. But my opinion is that if you know you didn't have any real insect or disease problems last year and the plants seem to do fine, my feeling is that you can certainly, I would get the soil out of the pot and fluff it up again,
right,
and get rid of those old roots. And again, I think fluffing it up is particularly important, too, because it gets so compacted from being watered all the time. Mm-hmm. Then I think there's no reason why you couldn't go ahead and reuse it. If you were concerned about insect and disease problems, you could actually pasteurize it in your outside grill or something where you cook it for about 30 minutes. And some people do that. But my feeling is if you really don't seem to have had any disease problems, I think you could certainly get away with using the same soil.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks. I was going to ask about that home sterilization.
Yeah.
I suppose there's some people that might even put it in their oven.
Yeah. I have. If you don't mind that earthy smell, because it definitely sort of this aroma,
smell
honey,
of roasting
really,
dirt.
Honey, what are we cooking? What are we having for dinner tonight?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about really getting back to nature.
And well, it's good fiber, I've heard.
And there's minerals, I'm sure
it's
there
minerals,
is. There are minerals
fiber
in there, and you just make sure you brush real well afterwards. Okay. But if you don't want to do that, then the grill would be.
Yeah, and probably for most people, probably is the way to run it.
So you would just light a good hot fire and maybe spread some aluminum foil over the thing,
right,
and just put the dirt on top?
Right. And you'd want it to, it's supposed to get to 180 degrees for at least 30 minutes. Hmm. So you might want to let it cook for maybe 45 minutes, thinking that it took a while to get up to that temperature.
Okay. let's go on here. Ogden is next, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've got a question back to grass. I put in a complete new yard. I backfilled a lot of black dirt in and put it up to 4 foot deep on the hill. First question is, I had to put the dirt around very mature oak trees to a depth of 3 to 4 feet. Is that going to affect the oak trees?
Do you want my real answer?
I've gotten two opinions. One is the state of Illinois does it all the time, and it does not affect the tree. And then I've also had other people tell me that, well, years and years down the road, it could kill the tree.
My experiences have been that it is detrimental to the tree.
Okay.
Especially at that depth. And usually what we say is that generally around, especially mature trees like that, is that you add no more than a couple inches. So, because you have to, I guess the big thing is that you have to keep in mind that you know, the roots of the tree on these big guys, even on these big guys, a lot of those feeder roots are only within the top 18 inches of soil. And so they've sort of gotten, that's where they're growing, and the oxygen, carbon dioxide, everything that's appropriate at that depth is what they're used to. That's what they've been growing at. And now you've completely changed everything. Now those roots are, instead of being 18 inches deep, now they're, you know, 4 feet deep. Well, all those things change. The amount of water that those roots get, the amount of air that they get, those kind of things. It's all different. And I'd be very concerned about that if I had some mature oak trees.
Okay.
Some trees tolerate that much better than others. So I guess when you say the state of Illinois does it, I wonder if they're doing it on oak trees, because certainly some trees will tolerate that kind of stuff, especially some of our natural floodplain trees, you know, sycamores and, you know, silver maples. And a lot of those guys, they tolerate that kind of stuff. But you get with some of these more upland-type trees, like the oak trees, they just don't tolerate. My experience has been they just don't tolerate that kind of change in depth.
Also, I put in new deep shade grass, and again, I'm getting conflicting opinions. One is that once it gets up so high, reseed it again with grass seed, and the other opinion is go ahead and let it grow out into seed itself and let it seed itself and then mow it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which way to go on this. I've got enough grass seed to redo it, or I can let it seed itself and then mow it.
Well, to be honest with you, what I've seen in Illinois is just not good grass seeding growing area. We don't grow grass seed here for commercial use, and you have to kind of wonder about those kind of things. And part of it is we just don't have the climate where that seed ripens properly. So generally, we recommend that you don't do that. Not to let it go to seed, to mow it at the proper height. And if you do feel like you need more grass seed in there, is to actually go ahead and put the grass seed in there.
Very good. I finally got some definitive answers. We thank you very much.
Okay. Right. Hey, good luck on the oak trees. I hope it works out okay.
It's in really hard clay, and the roots do extend over a very steep hill.
Yeah.
And I've done some fair amount of digging around there, and those roots do seem to go down quite a ways because it is such hard clay.
Let's hope for the best. And was it over the whole area where the tree roots would be, or is it just over in certain areas where the tree roots would be?
Over about half of the area.
Well, that's a good part. At least there's some roots that have not, where it hasn't been changed. So that's always a good sign, too. But good luck.
Thank you.
All right. This is our monthly program on lawn and garden care. Sandy Mason is here from U of I Extension in Champaign County, and your questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. I'm thinking about going back to maybe it was the very first caller or somebody at the beginning had a question about dealing with weeds and lawn. Mm-hmm. And I was walking around my yard the other day, and it really came to me that's really about all I have. Weeds, and they are green and everything.
Sure.
So now, I've never been one of these people that decided that I wanted my lawn to be like a putting green, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking, well, I don't know, maybe that might not be such a bad idea to do something, maybe a combination product that would do a little fertilizing and a little weed control. Are we now too late for the weed control part?
No, a lot of it depends on the weeds that you're talking about. If you do have mainly the perennial broadleaf type weeds like dandelions and some of those, we're not too late at that point. I certainly, it would be nice if we could, you know, we don't want the temperatures to be too high. I guess that's the big thing. When we start getting temperatures on a regular basis above 85 degrees, then a lot of the herbicides tend to not work quite as well. So you don't really want to be trying to do a lot of herbicide treatments in the really hot part of the summer. They just generally don't work quite that well. So you're better off waiting till fall, maybe, when the temperatures are. And actually, as I mentioned before, fall is actually a good time to take care of a lot of those perennial broadleaf weeds. So you might think about that. We're probably also too late or at least getting to the point where you probably lost a lot of the control if you had some of the annual grassy weeds, things like, crabgrass, and a lot of those have already started to germinate. So to put on something now would probably take care of some of the seeds that are going to germinate, you know, because it does germinate really into high soil temperatures. So you'd catch some of it, but you certainly have lost your sort of window of opportunity to really catch all of the grassy type weeds.
Yeah. It seems like in my lawn, the thing that I notice the most are broadleaf weeds.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I'll do about that. Basically, I'm lazy, so probably I won't do anything about it, and maybe I'll think about it again in the fall.
And actually, that's fine. You know, I think everybody has to decide on their level of acceptance on what they think a good lawn looks like, and I don't think it has to be the same for everybody. So I think we all need maybe a little bit of tolerance when it comes to some of the weeds and stuff that are out there, simply because it's very difficult to think that there's going to be absolutely perfect and look like a carpet. It gets very difficult to actually produce that. Mm.
Well, I'd say I live in one of the older sections of Urbana, and we're really pretty tolerant there.
And that's fine.
Yeah. We're pretty forgiving when it comes to weeds. At least I hope my neighbors are, because that's pretty much all I got. We have a number of other callers. The lines, in fact, are full, so we'll get right back at it. Danforth is the next person on line number 4. Hello.
Hi. My question is, whether you pull or cut rhubarb when you're ready to use it. I used to cut it, and then friends of mine said, no, you never pull. You never cut rhubarb. You cut asparagus and pull rhubarb.
You know, I have heard that too, but I have never actually seen it written that it really makes that much difference. So I'm not sure it really makes that much difference, to be honest with you.
Well, it must not harm the plant if people have been doing it for years, pulling it.
Yeah, I've seen people do it both ways. And because I just physiologically, I can't really see that there would be an advantage one way or the other. I know with asparagus, sometimes they do tell you to actually go ahead, and some people feel like actually cutting it where you can get much deeper, it is actually better, because even I know with my asparagus, sometimes if I just pop it off, that stalk sort of continues to grow, kind of, you know, and it never really produces anything. If that makes any sense. So I could kind of see how maybe cutting it, you could get a little deeper. But I would say go with either way, because I honestly haven't.
The pulling on the rhubarb, though, you'd actually pull it and you get this little, the pink end of the rhubarb. You don't, it's underground, I think.
Yeah, but see, I don't know why that would be an advantage, because it seems like you'd just be damaging any buds that are down there, mm-hmm. any future buds. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to damage the future buds because you want them to come up. So I personally would probably cut it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. We've got somebody here on cell phone. We'll go there. Line one. Hello.
Hello. I wanted to ask about a large oak tree we have in our yard that's been in poor health for some time. A raccoon family actually has made a hole in the trunk and has a home in it. But I wondered if there was any way to restore a diseased trunk that has a opening in it by enclosing with some kind of a material. Does that actually cause the trunk to regenerate the interior part that is rotted?
Actually, no, to be honest with you. And to be perfectly honest with you, you know, these old trees, now evidently there must be something. Is it leafing out okay? Is the only thing that you're noticing is this hole in the tree, or is it actually not leafing out well and not growing well?
It's leafing out pretty well, but there are some dead branches that come off of it every year. I can mm-hmm. tell that it's not in good health.
Okay. Because the hole itself, I really wouldn't worry about too much because, you know, these old guys can live for a long time with a hollow center. It probably, to be honest with you, I would probably have a professional arborist take a look at it because obviously if it's in an area where in case it did fall, there might be some problems with the home or something, then you'd want a professional arborist take a look at it and make sure that it is still structurally sound. You really don't want to fill the hole. I know they used to in the past, you know, put concrete in them and do all these other things, and all that does is just create more problems when you take the tree down or, you know, those anything like that. And it really doesn't help the tree any to do that. The raccoons didn't really make the hole. The hole was there, and the raccoons came in later just because it was a nice place to hang out. So what I would do is I would probably have a professional arborist take a look at it to see if there are some other kinds of problems. Do you know what kind of oak this is? Or
no, I don't. I don't know much about botany, but I do know there are a lot of folks who buy a bucket truck and call themselves tree trimmers and arborists. I'd like to know how to find a professional arborist that really knows what's good for the tree.
Right. I would make sure you find a certified arborist. And they should be a card-carrying certified arborist. And usually in your area, if you look in the yellow pages, they'll tell you that they're certified because that is certainly a selling point. And at least gives you some idea. Does that mean that they're absolutely perfect? No. But at least gives you some idea that they've had some continuing education because that certainly is a requirement of certification. So at least you know that there's at least some level of knowledge about what's going on. So you're absolutely right. I wouldn't just pick anybody. I'd go with a certified arborist. And let them take a look at
it. This guy is 150 years old. His trunk is at least 3 feet in diameter, and going by the age of the town and the lot that it is on, I suspect it was planted there as one of the first trees.
Wow, that's great.
On that site. We foolishly cut down the twin that was sitting on the other corner of the lot when it showed some evidence of disease, and deferred doing this, and 20 years later, this tree is still, you know, putting out a nice leafy crown, but I'd really like to keep it there for another 150 years. And
oh,
I thought
sure.
There might be a history of restoring a tree to health after it has had some openings that show that the trunk is not healthy.
Yeah, I wouldn't focus quite so much on the fact that there's an opening there, because it certainly, I mean, you can look at some trees in the forest and they'll sit there for years and years and years and years with openings. So it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the decline of the tree. I think I'd be more focused on how well it's leafing out each year. You can certainly get a few dead branches. Certainly some of the lower branches might die for one reason or another because they get shaded. And so once in a while you can get that. But if it's going farther than that, then that's when I think somebody really needs to take a look at it to see if there's something else going on there. We do have a disease that actually is going through a lot of the red oak family. That's why I was wondering what kind of oak it was. And it's a wilt disease, but that's where we see actually major branches dying over a period of time. And unfortunately, it can actually be passed to other trees. So that is a major disease that I'd be concerned about, especially if you have other oak trees in the area.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, and you might also, you know, we do have the University of Illinois Plant Clinic that people can certainly send samples to or maybe get some further information if they need that, or their local extension office.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Good luck.
We have a couple of other folks here. Next, Peru, line number two. Hello.
From Peru, Illinois?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, jokingly, that I don't agree with you with your answer to the first gentleman on rhubarb. When you talk about cutting rhubarb, you don't cut rhubarb, you pull it. Because if you cut rhubarb and you leave any kind of stump above the ground, you let a virus get into it, and that in turn will kill that rhubarb plant eventually. So I hope I'm not disturbing to your response.
Oh, no, I have not seen that written.
And I mean, I don't know that it's written. In my experience, my answer does not come from education. It comes from experience of a family having rhubarb for over 100 years. But anyway...
Well, that's good to know. I guess I'd be curious what virus it is, and I wonder if it's not a fungus, not a virus.
This response came from your own plant service, and I have a written letter to that effect.
Oh, great. Well, good. Well, hopefully that person's still listening.
Anyway, we stand corrected, don't we?
No, that's fine. Well, and we did have a caller, someone who called in and said, you know, I've heard one way, I've heard another way. What do you think? So
the best thing to do is to pull the rhubarb. And as far as asparagus, the commercial growers of asparagus, for example, in the Rochelle, Illinois area, they, in turn, cut asparagus about 1 inch below the surface. And what it does is it encourages more growth, and they'll cut asparagus from about the 1st of May to the 15th of June. And they are commercial growers of it, and they do know their business.
Well, I think I did mention that I cut my asparagus.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Yeah,
especially
okay.
If you cut it below the ground, it will stimulate further growth. But I do agree with you in regards to your response on the oak trees. And I've seen this numerous times in construction of new residences where people who have oak trees have a lot of, earth moving being done, and it results in compaction. And the roots of those oak trees will not stand the compaction. And usually within about 3 years, you're seeing all of those oak trees dying off, and it's a shame. So if there's to be any work done around your yard, keep the compaction to the very, very minimum, is what I've seen in my experience, or else you're going to lose those beautiful oak trees. Okay?
Very
right,
good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Very good. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, let's review. Cut the asparagus.
Cut asparagus.
Pull the
rhubarb.
All right. And we'll have some lovely samplers made up and... We're
available
for sale.
And we'll all get this right.
And we'll put them right up. All right. Very good. And
see, those old folk tales are, there's a reason for those.
Well, see, well, that's the thing. You know, you can get some information from books, but then some things you just have to experience it and see how
that's
it goes,
right.
And you learn stuff. All right. Very good. Let's continue. The next caller here in line is in Savoy, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
About transplanting rose bushes. We have some rose bushes that don't look like they're too old on the east side, but they're in a shady area.
Mm-hmm.
They leaf, but they never bloom. We've been here, this is the third year. And I wonder, can we transplant those now?
Mm-hmm. And they've only been in there for 3 years? Is
I
that what you're
know.
Saying?
No, they were here when we moved here.
Oh. Yeah.
They haven't gotten very big.
Yeah. You can certainly try it. I haven't seen it to be all that terribly successful on really old, you know, older rose bushes.
Uh-huh.
As if they've been in there for a couple of years and usually you can move them. But you could certainly try it.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds like you're not going to lose much because it doesn't sound like they're doing much in that area anyway. But I would do it now. I wouldn't wait much longer.
And they do need sun.
Right, right. Usually we say at least 8 hours of sun for them to bloom very well.
When you transplant them, should they be balled up or?
Well, I think what you'll find is that you dig them up. My experience has been with roses, they tend to have a lot of big roots and not a whole lot of fine roots. So usually all the soil just falls off of them.
Okay.
So you generally, I would just, you know, dig it up as best you can, try to get as many roots as you can, and then immediately plant it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a try.
Good luck.
Very good.
Thank
all
you.
Right. To next caller here, Champaign County. This is line one. Hello.
Yes, hello. I have a comment on the last rosebush question. In my experience, because I live in an open area, when I have roses that die back, die below the crown, they will still come up and look beautiful and be green, but they will never bloom because they've gone back to their rootstock. So if she's had a lot of cold and heaving and they weren't particularly protected, that's another possibility.
Oh,
roses.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because it could be that this isn't really the original rose anyway. This is just the rootstock that's coming up, so you're right.
Yeah. Well, my question is another one about trees. I have a ginkgo tree that's probably about 15 to 20 years old, and I thought they were impervious to just about everything, but it has come out this spring and leafed out and looked fine, and then all of a sudden, all the leaves have just totally wilted and are starting to curl. They're still green. They don't have any spots on them, but they're very wilted. To me, it would almost look like herbicide damage, but I don't think there's been any, and there are grapes quite near these that are sensitive, you know, to almost everything, and they look perfectly fine. Then I also looked about a quarter of a mile from where I live at another ginkgo tree about the same size. It looks the same way. Is there something going on with ginkgos, or what do you think that could be?
Not that I'm aware of, because I'm with you. Usually we don't see too many insect and disease problems on them at all.
They look fine in town. I've looked at all of them, and they look just great.
When you say they're wilted, are they actually curled, or are they actually
the
wilted? Like
they're curling around underneath on the bottom and curling under.
And it's, but it doesn't look typically like what you would think if it had didn't have enough water or something like that. Or it does look like that.
We're very short on water, but I did go ahead and I put a lot of water, several hours of water on it, and it made absolutely no difference.
Yeah, yeah. Have you felt the leaves? Do they feel kind of, kind of thick and a little rubbery? And I don't know if you go out and touch the leaves too much.
I thought they felt normal when I was looking at them, except that they were curled up.
Yeah. Well,
it is 100% of the tree is that way.
Wow. Well, right offhand, I'm not sure what that would be. You might want to take a sample either to a local extension office, or you could send it to the U of I Plant Clinic. Either one, take a look at it. That, to be honest with you, the only problem I've ever seen with ginkgos has been herbicide damage. As you said, if grapes are in the area, you would assume that grapes would also be showing that, since they seem to be particularly sensitive. But my experiences have been that ginkgos seem to be fairly sensitive to herbicide injury.
Back out, or what would happen?
Usually what you'll see is that the new growth, and you might just sort of wait and see what happens, but the new growth then ends up being just fine.
In other words, it won't kill or severely damage
No.
the tree. It's just this set of leaves.
Right,
How long
right.
would it be before it might send new leaves out?
It should be. You know, this is the time for a lot of growth on trees, so they should be. My experience has been when things get a little whiff of herbicide is that they seem to stall. They sort of sit there for a little while, and you don't see any new growth, and then all of a sudden they'll start putting on new growth, and then the new leaves will look just fine.
Does that take a lot out of the tree, or is it they can do that fairly successfully?
Oh, sure. I mean, obviously it would depend on if it is herbicide injury, and it would depend on how much they got it at any one time. But my experiences have been is that generally they leaf out of it and do just fine after that.
Well, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good luck.
We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason from U of I Extension in Champaign County. This is our monthly lawn and garden show. Questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Back to Champaign. That's the next person, line number two.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pretty quick question, which might not actually be in the area of expertise here, but I have a peach tree in my backyard, and every year the squirrels eat every peach on it, and I wondered if there's any way to protect peaches from squirrels, and I will get off the line and let somebody else.
I had an experience like that myself.
Wow,
we have various
question.
Kinds of fruit in our yard, and we have some grapes and some berries, and it seems that either squirrels, birds, somebody manages to eat it before it can even get ripe. And this, in our case, it was not a very big tree, and I guess I started thinking, if I really wanted to have that fruit, I would have to put a net over it.
Yeah.
Literally cover it so that the squirrels couldn't get at it.
Yeah, I think that's about the only thing that you could do. To be honest with you, I don't know what else you could do especially with squirrels, because if there's any trees around them, they can always jump from another tree onto that tree. So it's really tough. And I'm not aware of any necessarily repellents or anything that you might be able to put on in that situation. Sometimes we can use certain hot pepper repellents and stuff, but in that situation, I don't know how well it would work. But I mean, you're absolutely right. It is one of the hard parts of growing any kind of fruits like that. But netting is probably going to be your best bet.
Okay. And are there some things you can try to spray on that would make them so that they wouldn't taste good, but then you could wash it off and you could eat it yourself?
Right. I'm not sure with whether it's labeled for some of the fruit crops and how well it would work, but it might be worth looking into. But there are some hot pepper repellents, and it's just the hot pepper stuff that we use for a lot of different things. And it does seem to work with some crops. I'm not sure if it's labeled for fruit crops. And I'm not sure, certainly on some things you couldn't use it on, like blueberries and something, or strawberries, obviously, when we're actually eating that outside. But I wonder on some of the other fruits where you might actually be peeling it, like peaches and some of those. So I would just look, right, if somebody wants to look and see if that's labeled and see if it's listed. But that would be one thing you might try. Unfortunately, a lot of the squirrels and stuff just eat right through that stuff and doesn't seem to bother them any. So.
Okay, sorry we can't offer
I know.
More better.
Wildlife is a tough problem sometimes, it really is.
Okay, to line three, I think, in Urbana. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
I've got some hanging baskets that I put out to try to attract hummingbirds to my hummingbird feeder.
Oh, great.
One impatient and some petunias. What do I do to keep those blooming nicely throughout the year? Do I have to cut them back? Give me some tips.
Actually, with both of those plants, you'll find that they actually do respond well to plenty of water and actually even fertilizing them periodically. You know, you might give them something like a 5-10-10 or even just a 10-10-10, something. They do respond well to fertilization, and you get a lot more growth. The petunias, probably you're not going to have to do too much with impatience. The petunias probably, as the season progresses, you may find you want to pinch those back or cut them back. They tend to get kind of long and lanky depending on which kind of petunia you have. But that's probably your best bet, is just to watch them that way in the way of watering and fertilizing.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Good
right,
luck on the hummingbirds.
Let's go
I heard they're
to...
back.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Somebody told me they saw some.
Let's go to line two, cell phone here. Hello. So call there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Am I on?
Yes.
We have a neighbor dog who uses our rose bush for a fire plug. Is there a good repellent for that?
Wow. There are some repellents that are listed for dogs and cats, but to be honest with you, I haven't seen them to be all that terribly effective. I don't know if there's some way you can talk to the owners, because ultimately it's really a problem with the owners and the dog's just doing what it naturally does. So it's not really the dog's fault. So maybe there needs to be some discussion with the owner. People have also given some other suggestions, and they actually have put a rock right next to the to whatever shrub or whatever that the dog seems to be urinating on, and the dogs seem to start picking on that rock, and then who cares at that point? So that seems to be one other thing, is sort of give them something else to use rather than your shrubs, and that seems to help to some extent. I have seen some repellent kinds of things in the realm of these actual sprinklers that are motion detector sprinklers. I don't know if you'd want to go to that elaborate use of something, but it's actually where when they detect motion, the sprinkler goes off and actually wets the dog. And doesn't hurt them, obviously, but certainly scares them away, and that seems to work. And those are available in catalogs and stuff. But other than that, I haven't really seen too many other things that are all that terribly effective.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah,
all
boy.
Right, thank you. Go to Urbana next, line one. Hello.
Hi. I came into the conversation when you guys were talking about lawns, so I hope I'm not being repetitive. I'm not too overly aggressive about dealing with broadleaf weeds and dandelions, but we get lots of thistles in our lawn.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very problematic because we like to walk around sandals or barefoot in the nice, lovely greens in the summertime. And so we've tried, you know, a little bit of weed and feed kinds of things. I don't want to do anything too much because I've got a lot of perennials and annuals or bushes. And I've tried hitting directly on them with weed and feed, and that really doesn't seem to do it. They may they sort of die back a little and then just sprout right up again.
Yeah.
So do you have any suggestions for dealing with nasty thistles?
Yeah, I think what you'll find is exactly what you're talking about, is that a lot of the herbicides sort of knock them back, but they don't kill them because they have such an extensive root on them. Mm-hmm. So what you might find is if there's a way to do it a little earlier, that would help when they're young. Mm-hmm. That always helps before they get much bigger. The other things that I've actually done is actually just to spot treat the thistles with Roundup, which is a non-selective herbicide.
Yeah.
And obviously that will kill any grass or anything.
Grass. get brown.
Sir, certainly would. And but then you can always come back in and reseed or resod that area. I've actually also done where I've actually cut off the thistle and then actually did a cut surface treatment with Roundup and actually painted it right on, and that seems to kill off the root too.
Mm-hmm. So just cut it off at the base and then just kind of spray Roundup into the root.
Right. And actually, it's labeled to be used that way as a cut surface treatment. So just read the label, and it'll talk about cut surface treatments.
When you've got lots of thistles.
Pardon?
It's a big job when you've got lots of thistles.
I know exactly what you're saying. And that's certainly one of the nice things about the weed and feed. So what you might want to do is just do your weed and feed, and then when it says on the label when you can reapply it, and they'll tell you on the label how long you have to wait, then just immediately reapply it when the label tells you to, and then that way the weed won't have a chance to recover quite as well.
Okay.
And just
okay.
Assume you have to do two applications. Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Good luck.
All right, very good. Let's see if we can try and get at least one more caller. Yeah, this is Newman, line number 4.
Yeah. Sandy, listen to the lady that called in about the ginkgo tree.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one I planted last year. It's only about 4 foot tall. It did the same thing, and I think it was a frost. I live out here.
Oh, really?
And I think that last frost we had a few weeks ago.
Oh.
I think clipped it. I didn't even think about it. I covered some roses and things like that, but I didn't even give the ginkgo tree a thought. And it showed up the next day or two that it did the same thing. So I think frost might have got it.
Well, that certainly could have affected things this year. We certainly had those cold snaps and things were already starting to bud out,
yeah.
And that certainly would affect them. We'd probably think more of like browning or something like that, but it certainly could be to the point where it just caused sort of a distortion of the leaf. So
I think that's what got mine. But
okay, well, that would explain it.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Then the person that called about the roses, I raised quite a few out here, and they were really froze back pretty bad this year, but are coming out of it.
Right.
I think she's getting it from rootstock. If she dig down and see if she has a bud union, if she doesn't, then that's rootstock. It's coming from rootstock. It won't bloom again. She'll have to dig it out.
Right, for those ones she wanted to transplant, yeah. So she probably really needs to do a little investigation before she invests the time in moving
it. I have that in mind, too.
Yeah.
Some are worse than others, and can't take the winter cold out here in the farm areas.
Right.
I would say it's probably coming from the old root.
Yeah. So it's probably not worth it having to move them.
I don't think if it bloomed, I'd say it's might as well dig it out and plant a new one.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a good time to buy a new rose.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for
your
comments.
Well, thanks for the call.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have to stop. I'm sorry. We got a couple of people we cannot take, but Sandy will be back again next month, and we'll do it again. And in the meantime, if you're looking for gardening advice, you might try a program that you can see on our companion station, WILL-TV. The show's called Illinois Gardener, and it's on every Thursday night at 7. There is sort of rotating core of garden professionals, people from University of Illinois, from various gardening and landscaping businesses in the area. They're there to answer questions. So you have the same sort of opportunity. You can call in and talk about your plants and get some help there. So that's on WILL-TV Thursday nights, 7 o'clock. Sandy is sometimes on the show and other people too. So check that out. And she'll be back again. We'll do this again next month. Thank you.
Great.
Sandy Mason is horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County.